Welcome back to Camden Cast, your unofficial Baltimore Orioles fan podcast from CamdenChat.com. I'm your host, Mark Brown, and we are recording this episode on July the 16th, 2015, in the evening. It is towards the end of the All-Star break, and the Orioles are about to go on what's really going to be a crucial road trip to start the second half of the season, seeing as how the trade deadline is in 2 weeks, and they're bad on the road this year, and Well, they really need to do well on this road trip is what it boils down to. So we'll see how they do. I am joined, as always, by my podcasting partner in crime, Alex Conway. Alex, how is it going?
I'm doing all right, Mark. I'm just a little worried about you and your trigger finger. I wonder if it's tired just blasting the Nationals all weekend.
Let me tell you.
There's nothing to write about.
Let me tell you something about that. Actually, I don't really have anything to tell you about that. But for anyone who wasn't listening, I kind of over the course of the All-Star break was really bored and kept seeing headlines that struck me as prime opportunities to troll the Washington Nationals and their fans. So I kept writing articles about that. Like, for instance, on Monday I read a thing about how Bryce Harper was complaining about Camden Yards and hitting at Camden Yards because he's never hit well there, and he said, well, it's a little too dark at Camden Yards. I mean honestly, opinions about Bryce Harper aside, which, and I have many opinions about Bryce Harper, is that honestly not one of the dumbest things you have ever heard anyone say about Camden Yards?
Most people don't complain about hitting at Camden
you
Yards.
You are a left-handed slugger, Bryce Harper, and you are complaining about hitting at Camden Yards. Do you realize how much of a moron that makes you sound like? So I wrote an article about that. And then it made a lot of Nationals fans really mad. And
yeah.
Then I wrote an article the next day about how the Orioles television ratings are double the Nationals television ratings, which also made them really mad. And then I wrote another article about how the Orioles franchise four that they unveiled at the All-Star game consists of four baseball Hall of Famers. And the Nationals franchise four consists of four Montreal Expos who never played at all in Washington, which also made them kind of mad.
Yes.
So, yeah. That might have to go into witness protection a little bit here.
Yeah. Your All-Star break was just full of trolling hot takes.
And it was pretty fun, I gotta say. And,
Did you have to bust out the ban hammer a couple of times?
I did have to bust out the ban hammer. I banned like six people off the Facebook page and like two people off the Camden chat. And it's not going to be the last time.
No, it won't.
Yeah, I might end up as like public enemy number one on Washington Nationals Twitter by the end of everything.
Oh, well.
It's the price you got to pay to be a blogger.
I guess so.
If you're not making somebody mad, you're doing it wrong. I don't know that I actually believe that, but it seems I've made Nationals fans mad. So anyway, let's get on with the Orioles. I don't want to spare any more thoughts for that team that has never won a playoff series. Oh, look at that. I couldn't stop myself. Oh.
You never can.
Okay, so
you never
before
can.
I move on, there's one more thing I read today. I'm not going to write an article about it, but the Washington Nationals on Sunday are going to have Star Wars Day, okay? So that's cool, and I wish the Orioles would have a Star Wars Day, because that would be pretty fun. In fact, pretty much every Major League and Minor League baseball team other than the Orioles at this point has had some kind of Star Wars event. The Orioles might literally be the last one. No, the Yankees probably have also not, but, you know, most of the teams have done something or other of that sort. So the Nationals are going to have a Star Wars Day, and that's great for them. But apparently they sent out some guidelines earlier that include, one, adults may not come to Star Wars Day wearing a mask. Two, no weapons or weapon lookalikes, including toy lightsabers and toy Star Wars blasters, will be allowed in the stadium. So you're going to have a Star Wars Day, and you're not going to let anyone in who's like wearing Stormtrooper armor, and you're not going to let anyone in who's carrying a lightsaber. Why are you having a Star Wars Day, man? Why?
A good question.
That's what I want to know. But the Orioles don't have a Star Wars Day at all, so.
I'm surprised you didn't write about that.
No, I didn't feel like it because the Orioles don't have a Star Wars Day. But if the Orioles had had an awesome Star Wars Day and then the Nationals did that, I would have been all over. I got to stay in touch with the audience. Okay, we're moving on. No more of talking about the Walgreens farming.
You sure? Have you checked Twitter lately for any material?
I haven't since we started recording. I'm thinking in the last 5 minutes, probably not. So we're just going to move on. But here's the thing. So the Orioles are really in a crucial spot. And yes. And they're 44-44. And they're four games out in the American League East. And they really got to decide, okay, are we going to buy or are we going to sell? Or are we going to do nothing, which I actually think is the most likely scenario.
Yes, inertia is hard to overcome.
And, you know, I mean, here's the thing. If you're going to say, okay, the Orioles are not going to do anything, what do we have to envision to make that not a terrible decision? It's like, okay, we need Chris Tillman to not be whatever he's been
bad,
right now.
Bad.
Like, I don't know why he's bad. We have one particularly irate Camden Chat commenter who basically thinks Chris Tillman sat around and drank beer all off season and now he's fat and that made his mechanics bad.
Interesting.
Which is pretty much based entirely on, I don't know if you saw that one picture from like the January mini camp.
Oh, yeah.
Where it
yeah.
was like Chris Tillman was just standing from the side and it was like the most obvious looking beer gut.
Yeah.
You're ever going to see on a baseball player.
Yeah. Well, I don't think that's it.
I would have it just seems unlikely that it could really be that. I mean, I guess it's remotely possible, but I don't personally believe
I think
that.
Chris Tillman's problems are he lacks fastball command from time to time, and he lacks the ability to throw his curveball for strikes time to time. And it seems that the start of this year has both of those things every single time. Although he's been decent against non-Blue Jays opponents.
Thank you, Steve Malefsky, for that.
Yeah, you're welcome. Because those games don't count if you think about it.
Alex, I'm sorry. That was very mean of me. I really take that back. I should not. I should not say.
No, I'm right on
fellow Orioles blogger. I'm feeling punchy tonight, man. This is
worked
up, Mark. I don't know. That's what we get when I have a podcast for a month, I guess.
You're all fire emojis the last couple of days.
No, I'm not going to go on about that anymore. No, we're moving on. So other than Chris Tillman being better, what we also need, basically, let's put Kevin Gausman finally in the rotation. Don't mess around with him anymore.
Yeah.
Then we need him to be good.
Yes.
Is kind of the second part of that.
Yeah.
We need to.
His last.
He hasn't been destroyed by all of the yo-yoing over the last two seasons.
His last start was obviously terrible. But the two before that, one against the Rangers, one against the Blue Jays, were both good. I think he looks better this year than he has in years past. Again, I don't know how many pitchers in a row you can say they need to work on their fastball command, but he needs to work on his fastball command. So, you know, it's just the same thing that they needed at around this time last year, which was just everything to be consistent, you know, win 2 out of 3, win 6 out of 10, you know, that 7 out of 10, something less stuff like that. And they need to basically do that for the rest of the year, which, like 2012, they did that. 2014, they did that.
Right. The years where they won the second half.
That's what they did.
They launched.
Yeah. And that's what, you know, I would assume almost every team that ends up winning their division has months like that, whether they be at the beginning or the end. But I guess if you're looking for trends the last couple of years, they've been able to do that.
So if the Orioles go for a 600 winning percentage the rest of the way, they've played 88 games already, so there's, what, 74 left?
74 left.
60% 74 gets you to 88.
88.
If you go 44 and
30.
Yeah. 44 and 30. So I mean that would be really good if they go, okay, 44 and 30 and still you're only at 88 wins.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean that's the problem with losing 3 out of 10 games. You know, even if you think, "Oh, well, they have to be better with runners in scoring position and they got to be this and they got to be that." I mean, they've already lost those games, so they got to make it up. They got to play, I mean, 88 is probably the bare minimum they're going to need to get into any kind of playoff.
Right, 80.
Game.
I don't think 80. Like, even for all the okay, the AL East is whatever. Like, is 88 going to win the division? I don't know. I don't know that that's gonna get it done.
Yeah.
Right now, you got the Yankees at 48 and 40, and you got the Rays at 46 and 45. And even you got the Blue Jays at 45 and 46. Probably yeah. one of those teams is going to go over 88. So, you know, really you need to say, okay, well, let's win 90. And then you're talking, okay, so you need to go.
And you're talking like a 620
win. 46 and 28 at a minimum.
Yeah. And honestly, I think they probably need to win 90. Because, like, they're 3.5 back of the wild card, 4 games back in the division. They should be trying to win the division regardless, but
right, we don't want the one game.
No one is so far ahead right now in the division that it matters. That you should be going for the division. You should always be doing that anyways, because one game wild card sucks. It's really exciting.
Yeah, even when you get Joe Saunders beats Yu Darvish in the game, it still sucks that they are there, and they could lose, and that could be that.
Yeah, and it's just like, you feel like you're not even actually in the playoffs.
Right, you haven't really made the playoffs until you win that game. I mean, MLB acts like you were, but you weren't.
Yeah, it's like kind of like the play-in games for the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, that's a very good analogy, actually. It's like you're there, but you're not there.
Yeah, you're not actually there. You're not in the tournament. You're kind of on the outskirts. So, I mean, you're talking about a pretty strong run. And, I mean, like, not an impossible one.
Yeah, I mean, the team is capable of doing that if everything... Yeah. Well, no, I mean, you don't even need everything to go right. You need most things to go right. So you need, you know, what were we talking about? Okay, so Tillman and, you know, Gausman to be good starters. Gausman. And you need Gonzalez to do better.
Yeah. Yeah. You need... The bullpen's been fine all year, basically. And they'll continue to get shuffled around. And then you just need the offense to perform on a consistent basis.
It's really been...
And it's been up and down like crazy.
I mean, so they're 3-8 in July, and they're basically like 1 for 1,000 with runners in scoring position.
Might as well be 1 for 1,000.
I mean, and, you know, some games, like, they don't even get a runner in scoring position, I think, happened at least in one of those games. Like,
yeah. I mean, yeah, the game against the Nationals, they won. They were still 0 for 7 with runners in scoring position that game.
Right, all the runs came either with home runs or they scored a guy who was on first or something.
Yeah, Matt Wieters doubled in the first, and then it was 2 home runs. So it's just like, it's not going to do it. It's just not. They haven't, yeah.
Because we were talking about before we started recording, the Orioles are basically led the league in runners in scoring position average at the start of July. Something like that, and now they're down to like fifth, and they've lost like 20 points off their average.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I mean, it was that number's not going to stay at 315 for the whole year, but it shouldn't come crashing down completely. I mean, like, the offensive approach is not what you're looking for currently.
Here we go. The July 1 Orioles game notes against the Rangers, the note on runners in scoring position. They had a 317 team batting average with runners in scoring position on July the 1st. Now it's 290 as we hit the All-Star break.
That's rough.
And they've gone from first to, I believe, fourth in the majors, second in the AL. Here we go. So obviously, here's the thing about runners in scoring position. Like, clutch hitting exists sort of, kind of, but not really, because basically your clutch hitting is going to be as good as your regular hitting.
Yeah.
More or less. I mean, there's ways you can get productive, you know, without an out, which the Orioles are, even if you make an out, which the Orioles I suspect are bad at, although I don't have the numbers in front of me. But just think of how many times this year you've seen the Orioles fail with a runner on third base with one out, and then the guy batting with two outs like hits a deep fly ball. I swear I've seen it happen like every game they've lost for the last month.
Yeah.
At least once or something like that. But so you know, you can get a sac fly or an RBI ground out, whatever. But most of the time your clutch hitting is gonna be your regular hitting. And the Orioles team batting average is .255. So you would kind of expect their runners in scoring position average to be floating down towards their regular average Which, of course, is our concept of regression to the mean rearing its ugly head.
Yes.
It's not something the fan ever wants to hear, because it's like a...
It's totally unsatisfying.
If you're sitting there following every game, it's a very abstract concept to say, okay, well, you know, the Orioles are having bad cluster luck right now. Like, cluster luck is not why in one at-bat in the sixth inning of a game, when, like, the starting pitcher is on the ropes and there's second and third and one out, you know, cluster luck is not why J.J. Hardy has a terrible at-bat and, like, pops out to second base. You know, he has a terrible at-bat because he has a terrible at-bat.
Yeah. Each at-bat is its own thing. Obviously, there are going to be trends up and down, but each specific at-bat is, its own occurrence.
Pitcher throwing the curveball in the dirt that Chris Davis swings at, you know, he's not throwing regression to the mean at home plate. He's throwing the curveball in the dirt, and Chris Davis is swinging because he's Chris Davis.
Yeah.
But I mean, so whatever the reason is, you know, they're probably maybe due for a little more. Although teams can exceed that for whatever reason, but nobody is 317 with runners in scoring position good, and that really has crashed down all at once for the Orioles, and you know, that's why they're 3-8 in July, pretty much.
Pretty much. I mean, the pitching's been fine for the most part. It hasn't been great. You know, they've given up two runs, 1-1, 3 runs, 1 run, 4, 8, 5, 2, 7, 3. I mean, like, the pitching's really only got them out, has buried the offense by giving up too many runs in, like, two of those last 13.
Yeah, like, since the start of July, there's been a 2-0 loss, 1-0 loss, 3-2 loss, another 3-2 loss, 4-2 loss in extra innings.
Yeah. Yeah, and those are games when your pitching staff gives up 1 run, 2 runs, even three runs, you should win.
Yep.
I mean, you should be winning the majority of those games. And that's something that in 2014, I felt like that's what they were great at. You know, they had 5 starters that were not great, but all above league average. And above league average means they're going to be giving up 2 or 3 runs a start, lockdown bullpen, giving up nothing to 1 run, and your offense scoring 4 to 5 runs, and you win most of those games. And that's how you win 2 out of 3 and 7 out of 10 and all that kind of stuff. And that's what they're going to need to get in the last, you know, the unofficial second half. Or
they're giving up about 4 runs per game this season.
You know, I mean, yeah, the pitching was bad in April. It was terrible.
Last year they gave up 3.66 per game. So I mean, that doesn't sound like a lot, but if you're talking, okay,
it's a good amount for,
you know,
sure.
If you're talking about 0.3 of a run and expand that out over 162 games, you know, you've given up a fair bit more over the course of a full season. You're basically talking about 48 runs over the course of a season.
Which is a ton.
That's a lot. Yeah, that's, you know, that's what, 5 losses pretty much?
Yeah. It's like, you know, if you're giving up 48 more runs and you want to have the same thing happen, your offense has got to score 48 more runs. That's a lot of run prevention that they're missing.
Yeah, and in fact, the Orioles' offense, as far as total run scored, is right around where they were last year. Although, as we were talking about before we were recording, some of that is influenced by, okay, they won an 18-7 game, and then they won a 19-3 game.
Yeah, I mean, that's, I think those per game run averages are, like, this year are definitely influenced by those big blowouts. I mean, you had a position player pitching in the Phillies game
for 2 innings,
and the Red Sox won, where they won 18-7. You were probably pretty close to getting a position player pitching. So I mean, it's those games, I think, skew the runs per game average that a lot of people, you know, you see beat writers and stuff say it a couple of times. So last year they were 4.38 per game, and this year they're 4.4. The offense isn't the problem.
Beat writers are very good at throwing out arguments like that. And, of course, their other favorite of late was And of course, they can't say it now because now that the Orioles have stunk in July, it's not true anymore. But when they were like 42-39 after 81 games, it was like, oh well, it's okay. The 2014 Orioles were 42-39 after 81 games. It's like, are you guys paying attention?
Yeah.
Are you watching what's going on out here?
Yeah, really? I hate that a lot. It's just, I mean, like, yeah, I hate that a lot. It's not the same team.
It's not last year's Orioles.
No. And, yeah, it's just not. I mean, you know, we were talking earlier about their record last year in the last couple of months. But, I mean, that just shows you that it's possible that they could do it.
You got to have the switch.
Teams
the light
do.
Comes on.
But, I mean, like, you know, obviously we talk about 2012 and 2014, but 2013 with this team happened too. And they just stunk in the second half.
Yeah, they made the clutch, you know, they made the trades for Bud Norris and Scott Feldman. It's like, okay, well, we got to secure the rotation. And 12-13 in July, 12-14 in August, 14-14 in September.
Yeah.
Now, Alex, I was actually surprised. I wrote about that a couple weeks ago on Camden Chat about that team versus the one before. And they were actually, I believe it was within one game of a playoff spot as late as game 164, something like that.
The 2013 Orioles?
2013 Orioles. Let me see if it was something.
Wait, game 154,
excuse me. Maybe it wasn't that. Maybe it was something.
I think it was probably close.
It was 151. They were they were within a game of the second wild card.
They definitely, I mean, and when they made those trades, I mean, they were like a half a game out of a playoff spot or something.
Yeah,
I mean, they weren't out of it the whole year, but that was definitely a frustrating year where the team never seemed to turn it on.
Yeah, you had the Red Sox running away with the division, and they were like never in the East race, but they were in the wild card race. Okay, so September the 18th, 2013, they won, and then they were one game back into the second wild card, and then they lost the next six games.
Oh, really?
One of which was when Manny Machado's knee crumpled and he was gone for the year. So, I mean, if you think about it, it feels like a failure when you look back on those trades now because they didn't make the playoffs. But with 10 days left in the season, they were within a game. So, I don't know. I mean, does that mean they failed? I don't know. Feldman and Norris were disappointing that year. So, in that sense, they were a failure. But the team was less of a failure than you remember.
Yeah, I think that's definitely fair. And that was the one where they traded for Mike Morse, too, who had, like, a wrist injury that no one cared about until he came here.
Yeah, that was dumb. But, I mean, whatever. They only gave up Xavier Avery for Mike Morse.
Yeah, it didn't matter. But, yeah, that was... Yeah,
so, like, it's not necessarily bad to make to have them make moves and have them not make it, but...
Yeah, I mean, we haven't even talked yet about buying or selling.
That was supposed to be the whole subject of this, and we've gotten ourselves worked up by all this other stuff.
Yeah. I mean, it's just
we talked
like
about
we were talking
doing about nothing, which is, I guess, what the Orioles are going to do. So no wonder we're talking.
Basically, I think that's the most likely. But I mean, I could see both scenarios happening. But to either buy or stand pat, I think they have 14 games left in July, 13 of which are before the trading deadline.
What, 10
which
of them
is
are on
July.
The road?
Yeah. Or 9.
9 or 10 on the road?
Yeah, 9. 9 on the road. 9 on the road, 5 at home, 4 at home before the... Because the trading deadline's whatever, like 4 o'clock on the 31st or whatever. So it's before that night game. So they're going to have to... I mean, they have to put up a pretty good performance to legitimately say they should be buyers and should be out there. But again, as we were, you know, I've wrote about and we talked about some, what are they selling?
Even,
what are they,
even
or what
if
are they
you envision, okay, the Orioles are going to go out and buy, like, who is there to be bought? Because they're not going to get Johnny Cueto and they're not going to get, you know, whatever, Justin Upton or whoever.
Yeah.
Whoever the best person is available, or the second best, or the third best. They're not getting them.
I don't think so. I don't see how an Orioles package is better for a player that other teams want. because the Orioles' top two prospects are both, you know, huge, gigantic question marks.
Right, they're hurt, and they have either barely pitched or not pitched this year.
So then what you're talking about is probably, like, the two prospects in the low minors, Chance Sisko, the catcher, and Jomar Reyes, who's the third baseman. Both of them are not near perfect prospects, and they're probably the only Orioles position prospects worth paying attention to or worth anything left in their system after the injuries to Harvey and Bundy. So, you know, are they going to get you anything? I don't, like, is Mike Wright going to get you anything of note? You know, maybe they go out and trade for, you know, like the K-Rod trade or something like that. Just get a reliever
which
by giving
up. Another stupid trade, although that hasn't hurt them because Nick Delmonico has turned into nothing. But,
yeah,
like, just the process of, okay, we're going to trade for a reliever who's having a great year so far that he's never really had before.
Yeah.
Well, guess what? Then you trade for him, and then he's going back to what he always has been, which is exactly what happened.
Pretty much.
He was bad. He was not a good Oriole. And also, wasn't he the guy who, like, beat the crap out of his father-in-law when he was on the Mets? Was that the guy I'm thinking of?
No, that was Johan Santana, wasn't it? Or did K-Rod do that too?
I thought that was K-Rod. I could be mistaken, and if I'm falsely imputing Francisco Rodriguez's reputation, I take that back. But
yeah, you're right. It's K-Rod.
Yeah, he got into some fight with his father-in-law at Citi Field while he was on the Mets.
Yeah, so I mean, like, I could see them doing that trade because Dan Duquette seems to like to do that trade. And, like, we were, you know.
He does. Maybe, he does seem to like it. I don't like him doing it, but
I don't either. Like, one name I've seen floated around is the Brewers pitcher who also got suspended for a foreign substance on his arm, Will Smith, and he's actually under years of team control and only 26. He's ARB eligible for the first time next year, which, I mean, his price obviously could be going up and up, but maybe
I just want to let you all know how hard it was for me to suppress the urge to start rapping a Will Smith song right now. I've spared you all, and I want you to know that it took a lot out of me, but I did. So Will Smith, the Brewer,
who has a 1.87 ERA this year.
Well, that's pretty good.
Yeah. And, you know, he's striking out a ton of people. I think he's a lefty, yeah. So he's a lefty that I think is pretty effective against.
So here's our dream scenario there. We get Will Smith. Well, the Orioles get Will Smith. Obviously, you and I are not personally getting Will Smith, but.
No.
So he's a lefty pitcher. So maybe you trade for him, and then that lets you non-tender Brian Mattis next year because you've already got Will Smith.
If Brian Mattis is an Oriole in 2016, I might defect my fandom or just give up for a year or something.
I wouldn't defect, but I would be constantly grumbling about it until he was DFA'd pretty much.
Actually, I was just looking at Will Smith's splits. He's been terrible against left-handed batters this year.
Really? So how are you going to have a 1.87 ERA when you're a lefty and you're terrible against lefty batters? That's interesting.
That is interesting. That's what I was thinking, too.
That's really weird.
He has a 130 batting average against right-handers and a 291 against left-handers.
That is a huge mystery. 417 BABIP against lefties.
Yeah,
lefties against him, I suppose we should say.
Yeah.
How does that happen?
In his career, it's basically the same. So, maybe just a little bit of bad luck.
I don't know. I don't even know what a hypothetical trade for Will Smith. Will Smith, by the way, was the player who was also suspended for a foreign substance roughly around the same time as Brian Mattis.
But for some reason got less.
And yeah, he only got suspended for 6 games, and MLB came out with some BS about, oh, well, Will Smith has pitched in fewer games, so he shouldn't be suspended for as many games.
In fact,
I looked at that around the time that happened. And if you went by batters faced, it was within 5. I don't remember the exact number right now, but they had faced almost the same number of batters. But somehow, because Will Smith had pitched in fewer games, he only got suspended for 6. But we know the real reason, Alex.
Yeah.
The real reason is MLB Commissioner's Office is out to get the Orioles right now.
Yeah. because why wouldn't they be?
Which is why the next All-Star games are in San Diego and then Miami and then Washington, District of Columbia.
It would appear to me that a bunch of unfortunate things keep happening to the Orioles coming out of the Major League Commissioner's office.
Yeah, like who could imagine what could be the source of that?
Yeah. But back to Will Smith.
Back to Will Smith.
I have also no idea what he could possibly get for, or what you would have to give up to get him. Like I said, I guess he's got some arb years left, and this is his best. This has been his best year thus far. So I don't know what you'd give up, but
I mean,
something.
That seems like one of those someone who is like your eighth best prospect, and nobody's eighth best prospect is ever likely to be much. That's just the way it goes. Yeah. Like you hear that, you say, "Oh man, their eighth best prospect." You can't give up your eighth best prospect. It's not someone who matters, because if they were better, they wouldn't be the eighth best prospect. And, you know, every team
Pretty
has
much.
Lists and lists. And, of course, some teams' lists are better than other teams' lists. And it's just, you know, it's not likely to be.
It's not likely to be an impact player.
You know, obviously, sometimes those players can develop into something. But most of the time, they're not. And it's just, you know, they maybe will make it to the big leagues. Do some stuff. So who was number eight just before this season? Tim Barry. I feel pretty safe saying he's probably not still number eight because he's been real bad.
Yeah, real bad.
He got kicked into the bullpen. But that's the point. That's your number eight prospect, is someone who, you know, washed out of the rotation in Double A.
So, that's kind of the only move I really see them doing. I mean, to justify like a hard buy, you're going to have to be within, like, a couple of games of the division at the time of the trade and, like, have reeled off, out of the 13 games, you probably want to win eight before the trading deadline to really say to yourself, because that would put you four games over 500.
Yep.
And hopefully, like, 2 to 3 games back of the Yankees.
Then you're right there.
Then you're right there. And then maybe you try to go hard buy, but again, unless they're selling pieces off the major league roster, which if you're trying to win, why are you doing that? What are they going to get?
Right, and if they trade, they're going to have to DFA somebody, which they really show extreme reluctance to do.
Yeah. Unless, you know, if they want to go get a starting pitcher and trade a starting pitcher for him, I don't know.
Yeah, like, what are you going to do? Okay, we'll trade Mike Wright or something.
Yeah, or they trade, like, Tillman or Gonzalez, both of the guys terribly low value right now, and what are you going to get? Yeah, I don't know. It doesn't seem like all those guys really have going for them is that they have, you know, years of relative cost control still left. So maybe you could package one of them in a B prospect for Jeff Samardzija. I don't know. I mean, does that really get you going?
It doesn't. It doesn't, especially since Samardzija has been underperforming.
Yeah. And so, I don't know. I mean, you're going to get 2.5 months of a guy again and have to give up something. It's just the same thing that was frustrated people about the Andrew Miller trade last year, and it's frustrating them this year.
Frustrated people about trading, you know, Arrieta and Strope for Scott Feldman. I mean, like, obviously that didn't work out for the Orioles. At the time, I was not bothered by it in the slightest, which, of course, you know, that doesn't tell you anything, because as I know even less than Jon Snow, who, of course, knows nothing, but I know less than him. But, you know, I don't think Arrieta would have ever been good here, and I have to convince myself of that to sleep at night.
It's pretty frustrating to think, hey, this team could use an ace, and then you see Jake Arrieta being an ace, and then you cry a bit.
Like, Jake Arrieta in Chicago, and this is hurting me just to look at this, and it's going to hurt you for me to read it, and
don't,
I'm sorry.
Don't. Just say he's been really good and move on.
Okay. I will, Alex. I will do that. I will do this kindness just because you asked. He has been really good, and we're moving on.
But also, and it's like, whoa, the Orioles could have used Eduardo Rodriguez this year based off what's done with Boston.
Yeah.
But, again, I didn't have a problem really with the Scott Feldman thing because, like you said, both those guys were on their way to DFA land.
It was clear that their future was not with the Orioles one way or the other. So.
And that's a team, like we had said before, I mean, they were on the verge of a playoff spot. You can't be carrying around that dead weight hoping that it turns into something.
Yeah, they couldn't really hide those guys anymore.
If the Orioles were better at developing pitchers, maybe they would have, but they aren't.
That's its own subject for
a whole
host of other, you know, rants.
We could have a 4-hour podcast on that.
Which obviously doesn't seem to have improved much in the Dan Duquette days, because...
For some reason, no.
I mean, they still haven't really managed to develop one.
Not really, no.
A few guys they have
kind
improved
of
that were already here.
Developed
but...
Chris Tillman.
Yeah.
Kind of.
Maybe they've kind of developed Gausman, but they haven't let him loose, and we don't know what he's going to be.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty much. But then, I mean, I didn't have a huge problem with the Andrew Miller trade, but it's just kind of like one of those things where they gave up a pretty good prospect that they probably could have packaged or something else to get. I mean, he was great, and he was better than even you could have possibly expected. Probably worth more than you could have possibly expected from a reliever. But they should have just, like, if you're going to do that, go big. That's like buying but being a middling buy, where you're just giving up a good prospect.
I mean, if the people in the Kansas City metropolitan area had not sacrificed every firstborn child to fuel their, you know, their insane run of luck, and then the Orioles were in the World Series with Andrew Miller pitching in, like, the eighth inning of the World Series, you know, then nobody would care about Eduardo Rodriguez.
Yeah.
But it's like, oh, well, you know, they lost, what was it, 4 games by the total of 6 runs was the ALCS. I mean, they were in there.
Yeah.
They didn't get wiped out and blown out, and it didn't look like, oh, man, the Orioles don't even belong here.
Yeah. You know, I mean, and I don't necessarily hate, like I said, I didn't hate the trade. It's like... So what you got to do, what you got to do. And Andrew Miller was the best reliever on the market, and they got him, and he made them a lot. He made them a better team.
And just, he wasn't on Detroit when they swept Detroit, which true. I don't know how much that's worth, but I do think that may have been a factor, because I think that was what they wrote at the time. It was like, well, Detroit was
just
trying to trade for him.
It just sucks. It sucks when you trade for rentals. It sucks when you trade for rental relievers, because if you give up anything – especially when you give it up to a division rival.
For 2 months. And even if they're good, it still was 2 months.
Yeah.
And maybe they won't be.
You got to stare at Eduardo Rodriguez being good for the Red Sox for the next 6 years.
Yeah.
And that stinks.
Or else you're rooting for him to fail for the Red Sox for the next, you know, 3 years before they get rid of him. But, you know, that's probably not going to happen because this is the
Orioles. He's, like, kind of good, and then they just sign him to a $120 million extension.
That's probably the best-case scenario, isn't it, Alex?
Yeah. Hopefully they just, like, Rick Porcello him.
They sign him to a $100 million, basically, extension, and then he puts up a 5 ERA.
My favorite part of the Rick Porcello extension is that it hasn't started yet.
Yeah, he was already making $12.5 million this year, and now they add 82 and a 0.5 on top of that, but yeah, it doesn't start until next year. Yeah. 5.90 ERA through 17 starts.
That sounds good.
That is
you
the sound
me those,
of glory for us.
Keep telling me those numbers.
I know. That's numbers I don't mind reading off, huh? He has given up 66 earned runs in 102/3 innings.
So,
what does bold mean on Baseball Reference? Is that like most in the league? Or...
Yeah, that's what his league leader.
Yeah, league leader, right there.
In what?
Earned runs. It's bold, 66.
Yeah, it's the black ink.
It is the black ink. That's exactly what it is.
Yeah, I just, it seems to me that the trade market these days is definitely dominated by, it doesn't seem like the big prospects get moved anymore. It seems more like the young, cost-controlled major league players get traded. And those don't seem like guys the Orioles want to be trading. I mean, again, like I said, like Chris Tillman, maybe. Miguel Gonzalez isn't exactly young. He is under cost control, but I don't.
Yeah, people are probably out there like, hey, how about Jonathan Scope? No.
Yeah, I don't think they'd trade Scope. I could see the logic behind, okay, here's Chris Tillman, Mike Wright, and Jomar Reyes. Give us something. But is that better than what Toronto is going to be able to offer the Reds for Johnny Cueto? No. Toronto's got a way better farm system. Yeah. Are you going to sell super low on someone like Dylan Bundy?
That would hurt me if after all this they sell super low on him.
Yeah, I mean, that would suck. I mean, it would really suck. So, I don't see them be able to get a big starting pitcher. Maybe they try to go get a middling one.
I don't even know who's out there, but
maybe a corner outfielder. I really think one of the nice things for them to have would just be a left or right fielder that could play every day, who's not Chris Davis.
No more, some days we have Chris Parmalee, and some days we have Nolan Reimold, and some days it's Chris Davis, or even every day it's Chris Davis in right field. Like
every day, right fielder.
I went to that last game before the All-Star game, and he literally gave Bryce Harper a double.
Oh yeah,
like he just gave him a double.
I mean, he is athletic enough to play the outfield, but he is just not good at it.
He's not a real outfielder, and sometimes it really shows.
He cannot track fly balls. Which makes sense because he's been a first baseman his whole life, his whole professional life. So I don't really get it. I mean, Chris Parmalee is almost a better right fielder than him. So not sure what the whole thought process is there.
I don't know either. That's one of those things I never know what they're thinking.
Yeah, but if you moved Davis back to first and got an outfielder, you could play like 5-6 days a week. Then you're really only platooning at maybe DH sometimes and one of the other corner outfielder spots. Because right now it's like first base, right field, left field, DH. They're like just running through everyone they got. And no one's been like good enough to take it. And so I don't know what they're going to do. The name that popped up in my mind because it kept popping up my Twitter feed from him in the AAA All-Star game was Daryl Alvarez. But I don't know if he's probably good enough defensively to hold down the spot.
I mean, realistically, he's like your fourth outfielder who stinks less than David Lowe. So he'd probably play more, but he's still not probably your everyday guy.
No.
Although he did win the AAA home run derby. So good for you, Daryl.
He's leading the International League in home runs. I mean, he's an interesting offensive guy in that he doesn't strike out. And he's hit for a good amount of power this year, but he literally never walks. I think he has like 8 walks this year or something.
Has 7 walks in 357 at bats.
So he swings and swings early, but he doesn't strike out, which is like, you know, when you're talking to someone like that, it's like you basically have to be an Adam Jones quality contact power hitter to be like a viable offensive player with that like profile if you're not going to walk.
Let's see. He's got 7 walks, 43 strikeouts. That's a fair. Oh, I don't know. What is that? 12-ish% strikeouts maybe? That's not that much.
No, I mean that's like Nick Markakis level strikeout.
So his AAA numbers this season, 284 average, 308 on base, 443 slugging percentage, and supposedly he's like very good defensively. I haven't been down to Norfolk, or I didn't see him when he was in Bowie or anything. But
I mean, from scouting reports I've read and talking to some people, it's like he can kind of get away with playing center field, but he's better in the corners, and he's got an absolute cannon for an arm. It's the best part of his game. So, I mean, he's someone you wouldn't hate putting out. It doesn't appear that his splits are super crazy, so you wouldn't care if you were playing him against a right or a left-handed pitcher.
Let's see. Alvarez himself is a righty batter. This is his AAA numbers, mind you. 778 OPS versus lefties, 739 versus righties. So, I mean,
that's not a crazy split. You're going to be worse against the people, like the same-handed, but it's not 150, 200 points worse. So, I mean, it's like, I don't know. But that kind of batting profile coming up to the major leagues, you never know what you're going to get. I mean, if pitchers just start throwing everything 2 feet above his head and he swings at everything, then he's going to be a 100 hitter, you know?
Right. I mean, right. Like, you kind of like think back on the Josh Bell, who's not the good prospect in the Pirates system, who was briefly on the Orioles. I don't know that there's anything similar between those players, but just when you're talking about, okay, he swings at everything and,
yeah,
you know, he maybe hits a home run sometimes, like that time he hit two home runs off Cliff Lee.
Three, wasn't it?
Maybe it was three. I don't know. It might
I
have
think
been.
It was just like, yeah. Yeah, I was super excited about it. And then I don't think he was terrible after that game.
It looks like it was two. He had three
two.
Hits, two of which
three
were homers
okay.
against Cliff Lee.
I'll remember it as three.
That's fair. That's
the
fair.
Legend of Josh Bell.
Legend of Josh Bell. No, but so that was his good season, and he struck out 53 times in 161 plate appearances.
That's bad.
And he had a 525 OPS.
Yeah.
Because he walked twice.
Yeah. I think Alvarez clearly shows an ability to make contact. It's just whether or not, like, I don't know.
Like, is that going to play when he's coming up and, okay, every seventh, eighth, ninth inning at bat you ever have, you're facing someone who's throwing 97 at you, pretty much.
Yeah. And, yeah. Yeah, that's a very good
Are those
point.
Guys hanging out in Norfolk? No. Well, whoever's playing Norfolk, no. Because if they could throw 97, they'd be in the major leagues already.
Probably. So maybe he's an answer, but probably not. So I don't know. I don't see the ability to buy much. Maybe they go in-house for some spots. And selling would suck.
I would be mad. I would legitimately be mad because I don't even know. I guess you can make the argument, okay, if they lose the next eight games, well, you got to sell. But it's like, I mean, that's loser talk. It really is. And the Orioles are not a loser franchise anymore. They've been in the playoffs too the last 3 years. They're four games back in the division right now. You know, it's not like,
I mean,
they don't have much of value to sell because their best players are either no way they're trading or, you know, they're going to be 2 month rentals.
Yeah.
Even if you did sell, what are you going to get for 2 months of Matt Wieters?
Yeah, I don't know.
Who is even going to say, you know what, let's get Matt Wieters? Like, everyone that's contending probably is set catching already. You would need there to be, like, an injury and then someone is panicky. And then it's
If you were willing to trade some of your bullpen arms, I think people would go after that.
Well, yeah, but everyone wants everyone that's complaining in Orioles land is like, oh, well, trade Tommy Hunter. He sucks. Well, guess what? That's why no one's going to trade for him.
Nah.
Everyone else
I mean, I don't think
you
get any. You would not get a ton for Tommy Hunter. There are guys that they could, but like it would be super sad and disappointing. I mean, like, with the impending free agent purge and
everybody
stuff.
Everybody in that clubhouse has already got to know, okay, this is kind of the last hurrah. And then if you just, you know.
And it would be crappy if their last hurrah was, you know,
July
31st when they all get traded.
Yeah, yeah. And, I mean, that would be, I do think that would have a negative effect on, like, attendance the rest of the season and, you know, just the mindset of the players, because then the players are like, well, the front office thinks we're no good, so we're no good.
Yeah. I see why people say it, and obviously if they go, like, over the next 13, they go 3-10 again, you definitely would have to, like, you definitely gotta start looking at selling some pieces, but it would just suck. It would just be really crappy, and I hope it doesn't happen.
Yeah, I mean, because then it's like, oh, well, we're back in when the Orioles were bad, and every summer it was like, well, who's going to get traded, and what disappointing people are going to get brought back?
Yeah, yeah, pretty much.
You know, it's funny, Alex, back in those days, whenever there was trades discussed, the prospects coming back, I would always look at and think, man, that's not enough for blah, 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 and then you know, whenever it's considering if these days the Orioles are going to trade for somebody, it's like, man, I don't want them to trade for him. He sucks. And I just start thinking of all the ways that if they get traded for, they're just going to suck. Like, I was convinced Andrew Miller would end up sucking for the Orioles, which obviously didn't happen.
No. I'm not sure why you're convinced of that.
I don't know. I guess because I'm me.
That's just yeah, what it sounds I about right.
It's like the reflex, you know? If I'm prepared for the worst at all times, I'm never truly disappointed. You know the last time I was optimistic about the Orioles, Alex?
What?
Before the ALCS, and that's why I'm never going to be optimistic again.
I actually was pretty optimistic myself, too.
Before the ALDS, I did a podcast with the Tigers blog, Bless You Boys. And they were like, well, you know, give me a prediction. And I was like, you know, I think the Orioles are probably going to lose in four games. And then for the ALCS, I did a podcast just on Camden Chat, and I was like, you know, I think the Orioles are going to win in six games.
Yeah, that was my prediction.
Nope. 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 Didn't happen.
It did not.
Like, I really was feeling good. I was feeling like, you know what? The Orioles can take the Royals. There's no reason they can't take the Royals.
The last time I was feeling pretty good was like June 28th when they had just swept the Indians at a doubleheader.
And then they were in first place.
And then they lost they lost 10 of 13.
They lost like 3 out of 4, and then they were still in first place.
Yeah, and then they just kept losing.
And then they kept losing, and eventually the Yankees started winning.
Yeah.
What was it? Like, even after losing 2-0 to Texas on July the 2nd, they were still tied for first place.
Yeah.
There was a solid week there.
So selling would suck and would disillusion the fan base. Buying seems unrealistic because of what they have to actually
There's nothing to buy with. And they have nothing to buy with, yeah.
Yeah, they have nothing to buy with, even if there's something that they really wanted. Other teams are going to really want it, and other teams most likely will be able to offer more. So really, like we said, standing still is probably the most likely thing that's going to happen.
My number one rule of baseball rumors is probably nothing will happen, and it's even more true about the Orioles than it is about anyone.
Because
you're always hearing crazy rumors, and just by the volume of rumors, it's not possible for every rumor to be true.
Yeah, I just don't. Yeah, it's one of those things where the last couple of years, I mean, Duquette's been out there making trades, but I just don't really see it on this roster where they're going to be. Unless they trade away major league players, where they're going to add to.
Right, exactly. There's no
other than the bullpen.
Unless they trade or DFA somebody.
Other than in the bullpen, which you can always add to because it's seven guys. But I don't. They'd have to trade a starter, basically, to get a starter. And I don't know how much of an upgrade you're actually going to get with the people you have. So, standing still might be what people hate the most, but I think it's probably most likely what's going to happen. And I don't necessarily think it's a bad strategy, because you've seen this team play, you know, win 18 of 23 games. They went 18 and 10 in a month. I mean, obviously they have that capability. Whether or not that's like their true talent level or not, I don't know, but they can do it. You've seen them do it, so. You know, maybe they just let it ride, just say, try to get the best 25 they can scramble up in the next couple of weeks and just roll with it for 2 months and see what happens.
It's not satisfying in the sense that, well, they haven't changed anything, but maybe they don't need to change anything. Or maybe, you know, just the cost of changing something is too much relative to what you would actually gain.
And I think that Kevin Gausman in the rotation, I think he's got a good chance of being pretty good down the stretch. Like, I mean, he was pretty good last year down the stretch. So I think that'll definitely help the rotation. And that gives you if you don't believe anything in Gonzalez and Tillman, still got like three people they're going to give you a pretty good shot at winning. I mean, Tillman or Jimenez and Chen have been, you know, better than anyone was last year, ERA-wise.
Yeah. So hopefully they aren't going to be regressing hard. That would be bad news.
Yeah. I don't know if they will or not, but both of them appear to be very much near the top.
Yeah, they
of
made
game.
It this far. It's not like there's cracks in the armor, really, and Chen is staying strong.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Chen's outperforming his peripherals, but he always does that. Jimenez is actually like right in line with all his stuff.
2.81 ERA, 3.21 FIP. This is pretty dang close. And even if he went up to 3.21 ERA equals FIP, you know what? That's still pretty good.
I think that's still better than anyone did last year, ERA-wise.
I think you were right about that.
I think Gonzalez was close, but...
Gonzalez had a 3.23, and that was the best of the six starters last year.
Yeah. I mean, I think Gonzalez is just like basically fastball command is what he's struggling with the last couple starts, and if he gets that right, which I think that's one of his best strengths. He's just got some weird going on right now.
Pitching coach Dave Wallace seems to be pretty good at working on these guys, although whatever hasn't worked on Bud Norris this year. But I mean, I really feel like it must have been Wallace got him to do better last year.
Yeah.
I don't know why he's not carrying... What is it? It's basically he's not throwing the changeup against lefties that he was using last year to flatten his...
Yeah, I mean, that was one of his keys.
Pitchers losing a feel for a pitch is something that happens, I guess, but...
Yeah, I mean, a changeup's a pitch you can definitely lose the feel for, because it's very much sort of a feel pitch, because you have to throw it like you're throwing your fastball, but you have to throw it 10 miles an hour slower. So it's definitely like it's one of those where you have to get repeatable and use it. But if he's just a fastball slider guy, I mean, lefties just kill him, and that's what's happened again this year, which is what wasn't happening last year.
Like he's just getting bombed by lefties. Just
I did my mid-season review and actually wrote an article about whether the Orioles should extend Bud Norris or not, which right now seems hilarious.
Well. That's a good thing they didn't jump the gun on that one, huh?
Yeah, and part of that was his improved changeup, which was getting a ton of swings and misses and was really helping him out against lefties, and he's just not doing it this year.
1.005 OPS. God, I sound so Baltimore sometimes. 1.005 OPS lefties versus Bud Norris this year.
Not good.
324 average, a 390 on-base percentage, and a 615 slugging percentage.
So left-handed hitters are basically Barry Bonds against Bud Norris?
Woof. They're like Miguel Cabrera against for our current example, I guess.
I don't know. It's kind of... I feel like this is the hallmark of a 500 team. We're just like, I don't know what they're going to do. What should they do?
I mean... You know, that's what it was in 2013, really, and they made a couple moves, and they still kind of muddled along pretty close to 500 most of the season.
Yeah. And even those moves, like, adding two guys to the starting rotation was, like, feasible and necessary.
Especially, if I remember right, Chen suffered an oblique injury in there, and then...
Yeah, you had Freddie Garcia pitching at
time.
Oh,
God, they did.
And, like...
Sweaty Freddie made, like, 11 starts for the 2013 Orioles.
Yeah. So, and you're not going to be able to just, like, get rid of any of the five guys right now.
Right, they've already dumped Bud Norris to the bullpen.
Yeah.
So there's no dead weight.
Yeah. And the position that they could upgrade easiest would be a corner outfield spot. And then they would just have to DFA a bunch of guys, which, while they hate doing it, they will do it, obviously.
Right. Unafraid even of someone getting DFA'd, even if it's Delmon Young, who had probably the most awesome Orioles moment in the lifetime of everyone under the age of 35 who's an Orioles fan.
Pretty much. I mean, it was,
Because obviously they won the World Series in 1983, but if you were born in, like, 1980, you don't remember.
No.
You don't remember that.
Yeah, I mean, I still watch that hit sometimes. I'll just randomly pull it off my phone.
Why not? You know, it never stops being awesome.
No.
It doesn't.
Not at all.
Even when you know exactly what it's going to happen, exactly what it's going to sound like, it's never awesome to, you know, what is the last word? It's like Tom Verducci's like, Well, he's going to come off the bench looking to swing, and then the pitch,
yeah.
And like you can see, you can see it hanging before it even gets there. You can see it.
Yeah, he says right before it's everyone knows he likes to fire on the first pitch.
Like I don't know if I make up this memory or if I remember just seeing the hanger.
Yeah.
You could see it. Oh my God, that's going belt high. And then he swings, and then it's like just the most awesome sound.
Yeah. No, it's great.
And then the hype level continues as the runners are going around the bases, and then Hardy slides in, and he just like bowls over Nelson Cruz.
Yeah. He barely gets it with a great slide. I'll miss Stelman a little bit. I mean, he wasn't very good, but that hit alone.
It's like when Joe Saunders was moved on. It was like, that sucks. Joe Saunders was really part of that 2012 wildcard game. He's always going to have a place in Orioles lore, but that doesn't mean he needs to have a place in the Orioles present.
True.
One of the things that I have thought about as the Orioles have improved is you don't need to feel like every kind of crappy player that you like needs to stick around just because you like them.
Except for you and Nolan Reimold.
Hey, but Nolan Reimold isn't a crappy player, Alex. Come on.
I'm just poking you. I'm just teasing.
No,
you.
I know. It's okay.
Treating you like an Nationals fan.
I understand. And yeah, but like, I just
Orioles
traded Robert Andino, I was like, man, that's sad they traded Robert Andino. Robert Andino, he hit the game 162 against the Red Sox. That was awesome, right? But like, the Orioles are a good team. They don't need to say, oh man, we can't get rid of Robert Andino.
You know, there's a guy like that for me that has come up recently, Brad Burgesson. I really liked him.
Yeah, I liked him too.
His was kind of injury-related, but they still kind of got rid of him.
I always will be convinced, although I know this is irrational, that it was actually Billy Butler hitting the line drive off of his shin. That.
You know, I was at that game.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I was at that game. That sucked.
Realistically, that is... Well, I don't want to say that's the best thing that could have happened to him, because obviously that sucked. But, like, now there's a reason everyone can remember for why he went on to not be very well after that. Even though probably it's because, well, he was Brad Burgesson and...
Not good.
The Brad Burgessons of the world are not destined for much.
No, but he was one of the just, like... He was one of the first Orioles starters from when I was watching that I can remember that, like, when he was good... He threw strikes, and he threw the ball low in the zone.
How about this, Alex? He came up, and he didn't suck.
Yeah.
Because at that time, it was like, oh, well, the cavalry, blah, blah, blah. And all those guys came up, and they were not good.
Yeah.
They were okay at best the first time we saw them. And here's Brad Burgesson, who you had never heard of before they called him up.
Yeah. And he was good, and he threw strikes, and he got ground balls. And I was just like, this is awesome. This is what, like, watching a real pitcher pitch for you is like. And
and then Billy Butler,
maybe he was never that good, but
yeah, so that's the thing. So you don't need to get irrationally attached to the Brad Burgesson.
No, you don't.
And
like I did.
No, that's the thing. You can get attached to Manny Machado and Adam Jones,
yes,
etc.
So remember Delman Young's line drive double up against the wall. But you don't need to be too sad he's gone.
It doesn't mean he needs to have a lifetime Orioles contract.
No. So, yeah, I mean, but it, like we were talking, what corner outfielder are you going to go get?
Right, like one name I have heard people mention as well, Gerardo Parra, also on the Brewers, by the way. But, like, as you pointed out to me, he's basically having the best season of his career by a significant margin.
Yeah.
Like, he's got an 841 OPS right now, and his career high, which was back in 2011, was a 784.
Yeah.
So maybe it's because, okay, he's 28, so he's at the point in the curve where it's like, okay, he's got it going on. But more likely, he's overperformed his kind of peripheral numbers, and if the Orioles traded for him, he would... put up a 700 OPS the rest of the way and get back more in line with his career number.
And, I mean, that's not super intriguing to me.
A 345 BABIP when his career number's been 325.
Would also suggest
the last 2 years has been about 300.
The only thing with him, he has hit for a little bit more power this year, which, you know, that's a good indicator, hitting the ball hard. But still, I don't know how much that helps you. Justin Upton maybe helps you if the Padres will trade him.
Even he's been disappointing so far this year. Of course, maybe that means he's due to regress the other way.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, but, not like he's been bad, but when you're Justin Upton, 753 OPS, people are expecting more out of you.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I don't know. I don't know of any other outfielders really on the trade market
Idea. I don't even look because I'm just like, whoever it is, I know that Orioles aren't going to trade them.
Yeah. That's where the most obvious glaring need right now is they can't fix with an in-house options, although they keep trying to run through all of them.
They are running through all of them, and I have a feeling over the next 2 weeks they might run through another Reimold and Parmalee, perhaps, if they keep heading downhill.
Yeah. Well, that's what made me think of Alvarez. Just, he's been tearing the cover off the ball for a couple months at AAA.
Yeah, he's a guy who's there, and he's probably in the picture for next year, so it's not like it's a surprise arrival. He's just, you know, a couple months early instead of maybe he's in the opening day picture for next year.
But I don't know what he gives you. I have no idea. You just have to see how he'd react to Major League pitching. I mean, he could basically, if he was like, he would be, to be a good player, he would essentially have to have Adam Jones' batting line based on his skill set. He'd have to hit like 280, 285, and slug like 450, which is not easy to do at the Major League level.
It is not.
Because if you're never going to take a walk, you have to do, you know, I consider it, it's like three dials. You got to be good at two of those offensive categories to be a good offensive player. You can't just hit for a high average or just hit for power, you know. You got to be good at two of the three. And in the minor leagues this year, he's been good at hitting for a high average and hitting for a lot of power. But the plate discipline scares you. Because like you said, if everyone's coming up throwing 98, are you still going to be able to make that contact you were before?
Right, or, you know, are they throwing sliders that he's never seen anything like in his journey up the minor league ranks?
Yeah. So I don't know. I mean, he's one of those guys where you'd kind of just have to see it. I mean, I'm not a scout. I don't think I've ever seen him play.
Let's roll the dice, Alex. Let's do it.
I don't know. I mean, I can see it happening. If they're don't want to run Reimold out there anymore. I mean, like, he's definitely a guy you can call up, and if you want to get rid of him, you can option him.
Unlike most of these other jokers hanging around, he can be stashed back down in the minor leagues. So
I mean, that I think it makes some sense. I just don't know if it'll be worth anything, which is sad.
I just have no idea. No idea what's going to go on.
Yeah. I don't either. And it's kind of, you know, we just talked for an hour and 10 minutes about basically the conclusion is that they'll probably do nothing.
They'll probably do nothing, and we don't have any answers for what they should do if they did do something. So we are obviously full of useful insight for you now. But, I mean, just the process of thinking out all these things is just, I mean, I don't know how you come to any other conclusion than, well, they're probably going to do nothing, and even if they wanted to do something, there's probably nothing they could do.
Right now, where it stands today, at 44 and 44, I don't see how you can come to a different conclusion other than either they'll do nothing or we have to wait and see for the next a 13-game stretch really probably shouldn't matter all that much, but with the trading deadline, it kind of gives you this like artificial sense of you got to like figure it out right now.
Yeah. It does.
You know,
it does.
Most teams probably try to figure it out at the beginning of July, and maybe, you know, the Orioles decided at the beginning of July, okay, we're buyers, but they played so bad recently, like, you have to start questioning that.
Right, and then you get articles like over the All-Star break there as well. The Orioles had internal discussions about trading Chris Davis, but they decided not to do it while they're in contention. Well, then, Well, how do you decide what's in contention? When are you not in contention? What point is it, you know? There's a lot of hair splitting.
I talked with someone about this on Twitter, but I was just like, I would hope they'd have internal discussions about literally any scenario.
Yeah.
What would be the point of not internally discussing anything?
Yeah.
They should internally discuss trading Manny Machado. I mean, obviously it's nothing that's going to happen, but it's just, it's reports like that that just make me angry. But that's what you get in this day and age. That's what get those precious retweets.
Rumors get you the page views, Alex, and I don't like it, but it's the truth.
It is. I mean, I click on them, I'm not going to lie. I want to know what the rumors are, but they're useless.
The number one viewed page on the SB Nation Baseball Network, as we come close to midnight here on Thursday night, the number one viewed page today is a post about the Mariners being, quote, close to trading for a catcher that turned out to not even be true.
Yep, I love that one. And then
because Heyman, well, or whoever, maybe it wasn't Heyman, but somebody was like, well, Mariners are close to trading for a catcher, and then maybe it was like Joel Sherman or something, but somebody was like that, and then all the blogs that were remotely connected on SB Nation wrote about that, and then later in the night it was like, you know what, the Mariners actually aren't that close to trading for a catcher.
No.
But that's fed them.
My favorite tweet in that sequence is John Morosi, Fox Sports. He had tweeted out the rumor initially, and then it's like, Braves and Mariners talking about AJ Pierzynski, but not the catcher. That's not the catcher the Mariners are close to acquiring. It's like,
thanks.
What?
And then someone else was like, oh, sources. Jonathan Lucroy is not the catcher. Well, thanks for narrowing it down for us, really.
Yeah, it was like,
be really helpful.
He's
here.
Not the catcher. He's not the catcher. It's just like, ugh. But that's what you get this time of year.
That's,
I mean, winter meetings is even worse.
Yeah,
but
that's what sells.
Yeah.
That's
again. I don't. I click on them too, and I don't really know why. If we all just didn't know about it until it happened.
The number one post on Camden Chat today was my post I dashed off after I ate dinner about Michael Bowden opting out from his contract with the Tides.
Really?
It is the number one.
Okay, yeah.
Nobody cares about all this traffic crap, so let's move on. Actually, we're right about to the end of our time. So, Alex, do you have any final thoughts about the Orioles right at this moment, 11:15 in the evening, July 16th, 2015?
Final thoughts? I mean, like we said, I mean, it's just this road trip, these neck and four games at home, it's going to be crucial for them to play very well. I don't know. If they're looking at a playoff contention, they got to start playing good, better baseball. And I think they have an opportunity and a chance and the ability to do so, but they have to do it. And
all
that's
of
why.
The starters are capable of pitching well, and the hitters are capable of consistently hitting well, but they have to do that at the same time.
But they have to do that.
Got it.
Otherwise, it's just going to be us having to troll Nationals fans for 2 months.
Muddle along.
I don't want to do that.
No, I don't want to have to trade any to troll anybody. I want to just be the Orioles are awesome, and that's what we're talking about.
Yeah. So, and I'll be really sad if they end up having to sell, because that'll be like the end of this little four-year run of actually good Orioles baseball.
Right.
That'll be sad.
The era will be over, and then it'll have to be a new era that will still be anchored by the likes of Adam Jones and Manny Machado, but it will not be a very
definitely a separate era. Yeah. This is sort of the last hurrah of these 2012 to 2015 Orioles.
I agree, and I think really, I don't know. I mean, that's not a good reason to not sell, but for a fan who's sitting here, it's, you know.
But if it ended on July 31st with, you know, like a Darren O'Day trade, I would be pretty sad about it.
That would suck.
I would sulk for a couple of days. So, what about you? Any final thoughts?
I don't even have any final thoughts on the Orioles, because I've really sat here and said everything I think about the Orioles over the last bit. But before we started recording, I muted the television, and I had it on the Tour de France And while I was sitting here, they were climbing a mountain on their bicycles, and there were dudes running up alongside the cyclists. One of them was dressed as Mario, one of them was dressed as Luigi, and one of them was dressed as Wario. And they were just running up this mountain road with the professional bicyclists in France, and I just think that's really awesome. So I've shared that with you all. One of my random sports interests, I don't know why, I find the Tour de France fascinating. I don't know why guys riding along on bicycles is interesting, but it always is. So that is something that happened while we were recording this podcast. Mario, Luigi, and Wario chased a bunch of bicyclists up a mountain, which wasn't even live because that actually happened this morning. This was like the primetime re-air, whatever. But baseball needs some stuff like that, man. Could you imagine if somebody was like chasing somebody around the bases? That would be the best. Like when you're on the road, the other team's fans are just allowed to like run in next to you or something. That would be awesome. Throw water on you. That happens sometimes. No, that would be crazy. But it happens in cycling, and I find it really kind of fascinating. But the Orioles have a good road trip, and I don't know that they will because they've been bad on the road. But I need them to. I need them to. I can't imagine them not having a good road trip, even though I'm usually a pessimist. Because I don't know what the world will look like if they have a bad road trip and then they have to sell. I don't want to think about it, so I'm not going to. That's that.
Yeah, it's kind of where I'm at.
That's that. I can't think about selling. So no selling. Selling is for losers. The Orioles are not losers. Therefore, the Orioles will not sell. That's I don't know that my premises are accurate, but I think that's maybe a logically sound argument if we have true premises, but I don't know that we do. Alex, they can't sell. I can't take it. They need to start winning. The Tigers are reeling. Tigers are also 44-44, just like the Orioles.
It's like
rock 2 out of 3 against the Tigers, and then okay, then you're playing the Yankees, and then that's the team you're chasing. So then it's like, well, win 2 out of 3 against the Yankees, and suddenly it's like, we can do this.
I think so. They have 3 whole series, and like the part of the Tigers one. I feel like they got to win them all, and they probably got to sweep one. And I'd feel pretty comfortable with them in a buying mode.
I don't know that that's going to happen either, but these are the things we're hoping for. So I don't know. Probably they're going to do nothing. That's our conclusion. Yeah. Buy or sell? No, nothing. Just coast nothing. Along to whatever end.
It's just kind of where they're at right now. It's just like the construction of the roster just sort of indicate to me that nothing.
I don't know. Go Orioles. That's all I got to say. Go Orioles. Even when I'm pessimistic, go Orioles.
Yeah.
So that's all the time we've got for tonight. Make sure to follow us on Camden Chat on Twitter at Camden Chat. You can follow Alex. He is at Alex Conway CC. Did I get that right?
Yep. That's it.
You can read about his thoughts on the Orioles or whatever else is going on. Visit us, if you don't already, on CamdenChat.com. Just bookmark it. Stop by every day. There is literally something every day.
Every day.
I don't know that we have quite as impressive of a streak as Rock Kubatko as far as days with a post, but I think we might be up there. And certainly there's stuff going on every day. And you could like us on Facebook. There's some crazy people on there, but there's... Anyway, you can like us on Facebook if you want. It's facebook.com/CamdenChat. And maybe we'll...
Just don't read what the people say.
Now, don't read. I know everyone says don't read the comments, which actually is not true on the Camden Chat site, in my not-so-humble opinion. But it is true on the Camden Chat Facebook page. Don't read the comments, really. You'll be better off not. But you can like our posts and share them, and we will be happy if you do that. So anyway, do those things. We will love you forever. That's a fact. So for Alex Conway, I am Mark Brown. We are bringing you CamdenCast. This is Birdland, and we are out.